Hi, this is Darlene. Welcome to the Whispering Wind podcast. I am so excited to have you here and get to share my novels with you. I want to share with you from the novel Looking for Porkchop McQuaid. I will be reading segments of the novel, and each segment will be an episode. I'd like to tell you a little bit of how the novel came about. I was attending an Appalachian Writers Workshop in Hindman, Kentucky at the Hindman Settlement School in the summer of 2004. I was participating in a workshop led by Lee Maynard, and Lee challenged us to write one line that could capture his attention. My sister and I had been canning pickles. So I wrote the line, "My illicit love affair began with a jar of homemade pickles." Lee thought it was a great opening line, and he challenged me to complete a novel based on that line. So I went home and I wrote a second line and a third line and a fourth line. And I continued until I was about three-fourths of the way through a novel. And then I got stuck. I couldn't decide how the story would end. I think I was maybe four or five chapters away from the ending, and I didn't know where I was going. So I put it on the shelf, and it stayed on the shelf until around the year 2010 or 11, when I was taking a walk with my sister, who asked me how that novel was coming and why I never finished it. And I told her I was stuck. So Connie, that's the sister it was, she started bouncing all of these wild, crazy scenarios off me. And while none of those particular scenarios landed with me, they did spark something inside me. So that summer, when school was out, I went home and I finished the novel. And then, of course, there was the rewriting and the editing and the revising, and eventually, in the year 2012, the idea became a reality. So I'd like to start reading from chapter one of Looking for Porkchop McQuaid. My illicit love affair began with a jar of homemade pickles. The whole thing started the same day Uncle Fawcett got arrested for indecent exposure. I'd gotten up before daylight to fix breakfast for Bob. Then, like he did every day, Uncle Fawcett pecked on my front door, and like I did every day, I opened it. "Damn fool chickens ain't laying," he muttered. "Where's the damn fool chickens?" He leaned on two canes. His black-rimmed spectacles, like two magnifying glasses, made his gray eyes look too big for his body. "We sold them last Thursday," I said. "Remember?" "Daddy took them off." "Oh, I forgot," he mumbled and shuffled away. I knew he would go stand on the edge of our lane and catch a ride into town with some local farmer. He had done that each morning since he had lost his license, the unfortunate result of an accident involving a cattle trailer. Every morning he asked about the chickens, and every morning I told him Daddy had sold them on Thursday, because even though it had happened when I was a girl and Daddy was now long gone, I remembered clearly that my father had sold the last of our chickens on a Thursday. However, Great Uncle Fawcett was 94, and his memory wasn't what it had once been. I was thankful that it always came before Bob got up, because Bob, despite the fact that Uncle Fawcett had willed all of his property to me, was short-tempered and mean-spirited toward him. Bob and I lived in a gray cracker box of a trailer, trimmed in snot-colored aluminum and made more house-like by the addition of a small porch, which had been fashioned from the remnants of an old corn crib. Uncle Fawcett's cabin was a stone's throw from my back door. When he wasn't in his cabin, he was hobbling around his little garden on two canes, giving his tomatoes some coffee. He'd carry a coffee can in the crook of his arm from plant to plant. Then he'd stop and, leaning on one cane, throw some grounds at the plants. Uncle Fawcett always said that coffee grounds could put a little spark into anything. I suppose all the signs that his 94 years were catching up to him were there. However, it didn't dawn on me that Uncle Fawcett could fall prey to the same maladies that plagued ordinary folks. He was anything but ordinary. He had served in 2 wars, won a Purple Heart, played in an original bluegrass band, and served as a tour guide over at the Gorge until the day he retired at a mere 75. About a year prior to that fateful day, Uncle Fawcett had done a peculiar thing. I chalked it up to dehydration, because I knew from a prior experience with Daddy that dehydration could make a person hallucinate. I had been pulling weeds out of the flower bed behind my trailer one morning when I heard Uncle Fawcett coming down the hillside. He carried a bird about the size of a guinea hen. He was saying, "Here, chick, chick, chick." When he got to the edge of the yard, I saw that he was not carrying a chicken at all, but a young buzzard. That bird had bitten the end off Uncle Fawcett's finger and had puked all over him. Still, he hadn't realized it was a buzzard. I hit him in the arm and caused him to drop the bird, an act which I credit more to reflex than to bravery. Amidst fighting my tendency to gag and fighting Uncle Fawcett, who was cussing me for taking his chicken away, I managed to get him in my truck. My sister Cookie didn't go with me, even though her husband, Thomas Jeffrey, had been off work that day. She seldom left the house. Not since the day she weighed in at the doctor's office at over 400 pounds. That had been at least 50 pounds ago. She said she had a thyroid problem. As it turned out, Uncle Fawcett was dehydrated, and the doctor said it was possible that he was suffering from hallucinations brought on by the severe lack of hydration. A few days after he was released from the hospital, he started showing up at my door every morning before daylight, asking where the chickens had gone. So this particular morning had started no differently than any other weekday morning. After my husband ate, he went out to the shed, retrieved his bike, which he called Bessie, and drove off to work. Then I locked up our trailer and went across the road because Cookie and I had plans to make pickles from some cucumbers I had purchased at the farmer's market. My sister lived in a pink farmhouse with gray shutters and white window boxes. Our grandparents had built it back in the 50s, and with the passing of our mother, the place went to Cookie. A dilapidated picket fence enclosed the yard. Beyond the yard, on the other side of the fence, a ditch hidden by thick weeds ran along the side of the road. Cookie didn't do yard work, and her husband, Thomas Jeffrey, didn't either. So the weeds grew all along the ditch, which was probably a good thing, because the ditch was filled with trash. Thomas Jeffrey hadn't always had a decent job, and garbage pickup was once a luxury they couldn't afford. So as the years passed, the ditch had been filled with disposable diapers and other garbage. The weeds that grew along the side of that ditch hid a multitude of ecological sins. By mid-morning that day, Cookie and I had several jars of pickles cooling on the freezer lid, all pretty with dill sprouts and quarters of garlic floating in them. "Mama would be proud of us canning like this," Cookie said. She dropped a garlic clove into a jar and watched it float until it wedged between the spears. "She would," I said. The phone rang. I was up to my elbows in water, washing cucumbers. Cookie picked up the cordless on the counter. "Hello? Yes. I'm one of Fawcett McCaughey's next of kin." Her freckled face went ashen, and she stood with her mouth hanging open. "What's going on?" I said. She didn't answer. I asked her again, "What's wrong?" After the third time, I gave up. She hung up the phone and stood there with a blank look on her face. "Cookie, what's the matter?" "That was the sheriff in Mercy. They're holding Uncle Fawcett in jail." "In jail? What for?" Cookie still had that blank look on her face. "He's been locked up for indecent exposure." "Uncle Fawcett?" I said. Surely I had heard wrong. "Did you say indecent exposure?" Cookie's hand shook as she took her keys and cell phone off the purple and yellow wall shelf in her kitchen. "They said we need to come down there and pay his bail." She hesitated before she grabbed her big black purse that she kept sitting on the table beneath the shelf. My sister breathed a heavy sigh as she stood in the doorway, completely filling it up. I knew she was contemplating whether or not she could go all the way to Mercy, even for the uncle she loved. Then she took a step, headed through the dining room and into the living room and out the front door. I turned off the stove burners and hurried along, easily catching up to her. It's funny how when there's a crisis, a person notices the strangest things, like my floppy shoes. I couldn't help but notice how loudly they slapped against her hardwood floor. It's also funny how someone might do something and have no earthly idea why she did it. Like me, forgetting to set that jar of pickles on the freezer lid before I dashed out the door. And I'm going to stop right there, and I hope you will tune in tomorrow for episode 2 of Looking for Porkchop McQuade.